The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
Leading off with the big story of the day, Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Columbus and T-Mac.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's frustrated. That's just part of the game, you know. That's just part of the game. And, you know, his mindset is whatever they say, the time that he has to sit out, you know, trying to cut that in half. And, you know, just like all of us, you know, I was saying the same thing last year. You know, I was trying to come back. That's just the true spirit of a true competitor. You know, he wants to get back here. He wants to be here. He tried to play through, you know, this bone sprain. This, you know, this injury that he had in his ankle was worse than the injury that he had in his other ankle. And he played. He still played through it. He still gave it a go. And, you know, he's a true gladiator. He's a true warrior. And, you know, now he just has to, you know, rest up and, you know, get back here as soon as he can.
Von Miller on Bradley Chubb from earlier today. Troy Rankin for Tyler today. Tyler off, back tomorrow. Troy, I know you've got a good relationship with Bradley Chubb. What were your interactions with him like over the past 48 hours?
Well, you know, Bradley is frustrated. It's more disappointment. He wanted to play. He loves football. That's why I always defend players. They don't choose to get hurt. Now, if you show up out of shape, you put yourself in position to make yourself vulnerable, that's different. But Troy Tulowitzki's, I'm still good friends with him. I used to defend him all the time because I know the work he did behind the scenes to try to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. And then it was always some weird quad injury, got hit by a pitch. You know, so in the case of Chubb, I do still think there's time for this to all work out. I get the fans' disappointment. I understand it. But, you know, I talked to Chubb, texted him. He said that I'm coming back stronger than ever. I'm coming back with a vengeance. He is motivated. Mm-hmm. He's hopeful that, you know, I'm hearing more likely he would return for the Chargers game on November 28th.
Okay.
He would like it to be, because that would be right around 8 weeks.
Okay.
He would certainly like it to be more along the lines of 5 to 6 weeks. But you got to be realistic here, given everything he's gone through. But he is someone that wants to be back out there. He wants to play with Von Miller. They've only played 20 games together in their career, which is crazy. Real quickly, though, before I forget, George Stoya, my man from the Gazette who covers the Broncos, he reached out to me because I wasn't sure how the Bridgewater Parcells connection developed.
Okay.
George has told me, he just texted, said he believes it was Abe Elam who connected Teddy and Parcells. Elam is an advisor to Teddy. So it's somebody in Teddy's life who had a connection to Parcells.
Jason Elam.
No, not Jason, okay. The kicker. So a man in Teddy's life. Yeah. Connected him to Parcells, and they've formed this friendship with it's become more than a friendship. I mean, he is an actual mentor to him.
It's wild.
And again, it is not your
I just couldn't see the connection.
Yeah, and it was a friend of Parcells who was also a mentor and advisor to Bridgewater connected him. And man, is it
really
cool relationship they've developed.
Fair or not fair? The timing of Bradley Chubb's first surgery was a few weeks after he signed his he got signed up for the fifth-year extension. Fair or not fair?
That he held off on surgery?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair. If he felt like he was going to get better, he had to be consulting with the Broncos at that time. Bradley's not a secretive person. He's remained in contact with the organization. He's not someone that, like, we couldn't reach him for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the optics of it can get a little murky. But for me, it's fair. I don't think he was trying to hide anything. It's bone spurs. It's different if you know, ACL, ligament damage. Bone spurs.
But he didn't want to get the surgery before getting the extension.
I was told he thought he could play through it. Not unlike this time.
Interesting.
That he thought it was, because he would work out. He was posting workout videos.
Mm-hmm.
That he was moving around. I mean, workout videos are edited. They're not necessarily real life. It's sunset hard.
Wouldn't that be something if there was a workout video? No. I couldn't quite finish that rep.
Yeah.
That was slow. Yeah, I think I'm hurt.
The workout videos are
drop that ball.
They're the sunset heart hands filtered through Instagram. You edit them, so you're not going to put it on there with you dragging your leg around. Like, stop filming. But I was told that he thought he was going to be able to work through it because he had good days, and then it was like, wow, this doesn't feel right. But it was one day or so, and then it would go away. And I've covered pitchers like that had bone chips in their elbow. They pitch, it's fine, and all of a sudden the chip would move in the elbow, Like, I can't throw. Like, it's literally creating an impingement. And I talked to a doctor today, a doctor who is the trainer doctor for the New York Red Bulls. You reach out to physicians who don't are more of objective. And he said the same thing, that, you know, it just ultimately creates an impingement. And at that point, you really have no choice. Like, if you're a professional athlete, you're going to have the surgery to get the bone spur removed.
Okay.
It, that doctor said to me 4 to 8 weeks. So the idea he could be back in 5 to 6, it's not unreasonable.
Well, there's one thing about healing from the surgery. There's another thing about being, I mean,
ready to play at a full play.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're talking about a ankle, leg, lower body injury. You're going to lose conditioning. I mean, I'm sure he will try to stay in a certain amount of shape. Do you remember what Vaughn looked like when he came back after his suspension and he just had?
He was huge.
But he wasn't hurt.
He was
healthy.
He was huge from lifting, like, upper body. Like,
it was everything.
Yeah, he got too big.
He got too big, and then he had the ACL.
Yeah.
Right? Because that can happen too.
You overtrain.
Correct. So I can't run, right? So now I'm on what? I'm on the VersaClimber, I'm on the hand bike. I mean, I'm doing whatever because I'm going nuts. So I'm benching more than ever. I don't know. You can become disproportionate. You know, the craziest thing I ever saw conditioning wise, which actually makes a ton of logical sense, I just never saw anybody else do it, was Brady Quinn, who was, and he's pretty hunky, that Brady Quinn, not going to lie. He would do left-handed drop back reps. So he told me to keep his body symmetrical in his training, so he's not always just dropping back in the same repetitive moments, movements the same way. He can balance his body out.
That would be overthinking it as a quarterback.
Well,
that would be overthinking it.
That was Brady Quinn. Couldn't really play in the NFL, but, you know, look good with his shirt off, Troy. So he had that down.
I don't want my quarterback to look like he could be on the cover of GQ or Men's Fitness.
Well, what do you want him to be? Couch Potato Weekly with Kyle Orton?
A little bit of a dad bod, because it means they're studying film. They're learning the craft. They're all athletic enough.
Yeah, that's funny you say that. Like, Elway kind of had a dad bod when he was playing. Jim Kelly had a bit of a dad bod.
Right, I don't
Peyton
want
Manning
him.
Peyton Manning had a bit of a dad bod.
Manning's in better shape now than when he played. That tells me I'm spending a lot of time watching film. I don't want a guy that's just so cut as a quarterback. I want him watching film. The mental side of that position is way harder than the physical side. Yep. They're not running the option, D-Mac.
That brings me up one of my favorite stories of all time. This is like a decade ago, and we're in the Broncos locker room. It's Tebow years. And I don't know. The locker room sessions are so awkward anyways. It's 40 minutes. I wish they were all like 5 minutes long, but they're 40 minutes, and you end up just lingering around. I don't even know what we're doing there. I hated it. But we're lingering around, and nobody's really there, and we're just talking to each other, and all of a sudden, Adam Gase runs into the locker room. Where's Tebow? And one of the PR guys goes, oh, he's lifting. And Gase, in frustration, goes, why is he doing that? And runs back out of the locker room. But, like, that was Tebow. Like, if there was a spare moment, if there was a piece of, like, he was supposed to be in some sort of meeting, or I don't know, whatever was going on. So I'll just fill this, I got 10 free minutes. I think I can get 1,000 push-ups in. But that was the legend of Tim Tebow. Where's Tebow? He's lifting. Why is he doing that? Which brings us to quarterbacks and Teddy Bridgewater. Where are you at with Teddy Bridgewater right now? Where are you at?
I'm comfortable with what he is giving this team right now. Sometimes in life, it's about timing, D-Mac, and this is a young, ripening offense. And it was like they just needed their guy to captain the ship, like someone a little older, the older brother, not all of us the same age. Sometimes you just need the older brother to provide that, you know, I've said he's calm as a lagoon. Nothing bothers him. I was asking Javonte Williams today, have you ever seen Teddy, anything bother him? He's like, you know what? I haven't.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, he's the same guy you see in the lunchroom, on the practice field. He said, we're in the huddle against the Giants, and I'm nervous, and he's slow heartbeat leadership.
We're starting to learn about him. There's nothing phony about Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
There was, and I love him. I think he's a cool dude. I think there was some phoniness with Brock Osweiler.
There definitely was with Case Keenum.
Oh, my God.
Keenum was not particularly liked by his teammates. And part of it, because it felt like he was playing the role of a starting quarterback, like an actor playing the role. It never felt authentic in some ways. It was really weird.
Trevor was pretty genuine.
Trevor was just a guy's guy. Guys liked him.
Mark Sanchez, for the short time he was here, may have been the phoniest guy ever.
He wasn't.
Oh, yeah.
No, he wasn't.
Oh, my Lord.
I love Sanchez.
He was... I don't say I didn't like him, but he was auditioning every single time he did an interview.
Oh, I thought you meant that way. But with his teammates, he wasn't. They didn't see him that way.
Okay.
His teammates didn't.
There's a difference between, I suppose, phonies and guys who are, like, turds. And he wasn't a turd, he was just, you know. And Brock certainly wasn't a turd either, but...
No, Brock would lay it on thick. Lay it on thick. Like, in the interviews, it was just, like, a little too much.
It's like, okay, Brock.
And we get it. You're trying to play the role of the quarterback.
Right.
You're saying, you're reading off the Manning teleprompter here in the back. We get it.
I mean, Tebow was absurdly phony.
I didn't know Tebow. I had never interviewed Tebow. I was covering baseball at that time. I've heard nothing but good things about Tebow the person.
Tebow just... he was a different guy in different circumstances. Sometimes he was a good guy. Sometimes he ignored you. Sometimes this, sometimes that. He was just a sometimes guy. You never kind of knew what the time was going to be, but he certainly knew when the cameras were on. There's no doubt about that.
The phoniest athlete I ever covered was Curt Schilling with the Diamondbacks.
Curt Schilling, okay.
I mean, the lights came on and he would say stuff, and then behind the scenes, his teammates, you talk about 25 taxis for 25 guys.
He's like, one of them.
Kurt was on an island by himself because he would do stuff that was disingenuous, at least his teammates felt, and he would distance himself with his teammates, but then he would speak for his teammates. Well, and they're like, you don't know us. How can you speak for us?
Maybe being a little bit phony is actually not the worst thing in the world, because maybe you have to be a little bit phony to give people what they want and sort of lead in a different way. I don't know. Maybe that's not the worst thing. Maybe that is a fault of Teddy Bridgewater, how absurdly genuine this guy really is.
No. I mean, there's a saying in sports, fake it till you make it. And there is some of that with leadership sometimes where guys get a little rah-rah. And in professional sports, they call it eyewash. That's the problem. And in professional sports, where you're dealing with the best athletes in the world, they see through guys immediately when it's eyewash and they're trying to lay it on thick. And they tolerate them when they're good. When they start to be average or undermining the team's success, they really can't get rid of them fast enough. I always appreciate someone who's authentic. Because then you don't have to keep your story straight. It's who you are. Teddy doesn't have to ever think, what did I tell Garrett Bowles? What did I tell Don Reyes? He just knows he told him what he believed. And I love that about Teddy. Now, he's got to still play well. Teddy, the leader, could not have fit this situation any better. But they've played two crappy teams, and he's played tremendous. I'm not sure he could have scripted two better performances in his life than he's played these first two games. But from a leadership standpoint, he's been the perfect fit for a young, ripening offense that needed someone to kind of look to in moments of crises, in moments of doubt. You don't get any of that from Teddy.
So here's the big question. The ultimate question the Broncos will have to ask themselves is how we want to move forward. That's what they're going to have to do. Because Teddy's just on a one-year deal. It's like Moneyball. They're paying you to compete against us. Against them. David Justice. The Yankees are paying you to play against them. Now, the Broncos don't straight up play against the Panthers this year, Troy. But essentially, that's what's going on. Panthers-Texans tonight, right here on The Fan, by the way. That's right. You got that?
And Sam Darnold's played well for them.
So, at what point, Troy, do you think is fair to evaluate what you want to do with Teddy Bridgewater moving forward?
I'd say the last quarter of the season. Just the last quarter, because health's an issue. That is such an important position, as you know better than anyone, D-Mac. And if you overreact to anything that happens quickly, you get to December, and let's say you're 9-5 and lose out and miss the playoffs. And you've committed your future, at least on a two-year deal, probably. I mean, that's the one thing. You could hedge your bet a little with
that's
Teddy.
Right. I mean, you don't have to go You could do well. Listen.
What do you think? In like 2 year, 32 or something?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
He might.
That's right.
He might
listen,
take that. I don't. I would think if he's playing well, that would be really hard to take that short term.
First of all, and Kevin, maybe you can look it up. What are the top 20 quarterbacks in the NFL making right now? You know what is and take away guys on rookie contracts. All right, just take those guys off. But anybody who's been in the league for more than 5 years. That is still playing quarterback. I mean, what is the 15th highest guy being paid? So take out rookie quarterbacks and look at the reason why I'm saying 15, Troy, right? You want to be a playoff quarterback. You want to have one of the top 15 guys in the league, right? You hope to. I don't know how you can win a Super Bowl without one of the top 15 guys in the league. Brady at 25 mil is the 15th highest paid guy? Seriously, Brady is the 15th highest paid guy at 25 million a year. Holy cow, man, Troy. So if you want Teddy Bridgewater, man, if you want one of the top 15 guys or in that neighborhood, get ready. Because what, you don't think other teams, if Teddy has some sort of incredible year, aren't going to be willing to pay $26, $27 million a year? They are.
Yeah, you'd be looking at two-year 40 to two-year 55, somewhere in that range, depending on how he's playing, you know, at that point.
Well, but I guess that's my point. At what point is that point?
You know, I would say December 1st. I mean, I'm not looking at the schedule, but I would say you get to December, DMAC, and that's say after that Chargers game before the Chiefs. So you'd have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 left. So maybe I'd say after the Chiefs game.
I guess the question is, at what point does the value of Teddy Bridgewater, how well does he have to be playing this season to the degree that his performance and what his value is and what it costs to retain him is actually a better deal than trading for Aaron Rodgers? What is it? And if you just don't think, oh, they just can't win a Super Bowl with Teddy Bridgewater, can you win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers minus 3 first-round draft picks, minus KJ Hamler and Bradley Chubb, or, I mean, whatever combination of players it would take? And because you're paying Aaron Rodgers, what, $45 million a year, minus Von Miller, minus Kareem Jackson, minus Fuller? Right? Because all those guys will be gone.
Yeah, that's where the math gets very complicated. That Rodgers, there was a time we all wanted to see him.
Maybe soon, minus Cortland Sutton.
Right. I mean, you can't afford everyone if you're paying that. You ask Rodgers to restructure to keep Von Miller. Let's say Von has 15 sacks. You'd hate to walk from Von at that point, but he's not going to take some crazy discount.
Yeah, the thing that I think is a false narrative is everybody just thinks, oh, if they got Aaron Rodgers, well, that's it. What are you talking about? I mean, you would be so, because you'd still have to trade for the guy. He's not a free agent. And what do you think, the Packers are going to go out quietly? There is nothing, Troy, that is going to force the Packers to do a thing. They will be in the exact, although the whole promise, we promised them this, we promised them that. I mean, okay, whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, Troy, they don't have to do it.
And no, but their cap hit necessitates they'd have to have a conversation with him to stay, because they would be in cap hell of $45 million, and he's basically saying, I'm not going to renegotiate. So that's what's going to ultimately force their hand, is they're not going to pay him at that number.
So I guess the question is with Teddy Bridgewater, because look at all the other boxes this guy is checking.
Yeah, that's
true. I mean, the boxes this guy is checking are ridiculous. Drew Locke, have we all noticed this? Drew Locke is an afterthought. Nobody is thinking or talking about Drew Locke. We're down there every day. When's the last time anybody down there, Troy, and we're down there every day, mentioned, speculated, talked about, cared about anything with Drew Locke? What was the last time?
The day the decision was made in August.
Right.
That was the last time.
Maybe
in fairness, during Teddy's first couple drives against the Rams, they were clunky of, oh, credit pause of, and then Drew came out and didn't do great either. But the last meaningful conversation about Drew Locke was after the Seattle game, frankly.
And you know, if they lose to the Giants, different conversation.
Absolutely. If Teddy was 13 for 27 with
different
a pick.
Conversation.
Yeah. Teddy, I mean, I just
but
keep
here
saying.
Here we are today.
Teddy, I'm not sure he could have played any better
right.
these first two games from a leadership standpoint, from a statistical standpoint.
Right.
I mean, he was 18 for 21 in the first half against the Giants. He's completed 77% of his passes. Drew Lock last year was at 57%. And I'm not saying that to take a jab at Lock. I'm just saying, if you want something besides Teddy Bridgewater after these 2 weeks, then it's personal. You just don't like him.
Yeah, like at what point would Drew Lock...
In terms of between Lock and Bridgewater.
Yeah, and like what point in Drew Lock's life... And I like Drew. I do.
I do too.
But at what point in Drew Lock's life is he going to have the type of respect Teddy Bridgewater already has from his teammates, the accountability, the responsibility, and the maturity level of Teddy Bridgewater? When's that going to happen?
And he's matured a lot in the last 6, 7, 8 months.
But when does he hit the same level that Teddy Bridgewater's at right now?
I don't know that he can without, because people forget Teddy had a playoff berth on his resume with the Vikings, and he should have won a playoff game. How can Drew do that without playing as a starter again?
Can't do it.
Teddy has some street cred from that Vikings part of his career.
And a lot of people say, well, it's a negative he's played for five teams. It's 28. I mean, okay, it could be a negative, for sure. It could be, or it could be, perhaps, Troy, the experience that is necessitated to have the level of maturity and balance he has right now.
And it wouldn't be five if not for a catastrophic knee injury.
Correct.
He might have played, he might still be with the Vikings.
By the way, what a great story, too. The legend of Teddy Bridgewater comes out yesterday. He was barely with the Jets for a cup of coffee, like nothing, and they got rid of him, but... His story yesterday about the Jets is they were the team that he got healthy with. And that the trainer that really helped him get back to who he was, he's got such a close relationship with him. He was training with Brandon Marshall. And he sees the trainer for the Jets. He comes, gives him a big bear hug to say thank you. You know, we were hoping that Teddy Bridgewater would be like Ryan Tannehill. You know, like if given enough opportunity, there'd be something there. Tommy Maddox went through a crazy run, Troy, and then kind of blossomed bizarrely late in his career. So I guess my question, I'll just throw it out there and leave it out there, is at what point, how much more do you need? Like, where does it go? And I get it. You know, everybody's a little stung because people want to throw millions at Trevor Siemian like he was the future. I'll tell you this, Teddy Bridgewater's got a lot more experience at a higher level and credibility than Trevor Siemian could ever dream of. Way more.
Health is an issue for Teddy. He's got to show he can stay healthy. He's checked every box in terms of leadership. But you raise such a great question, D-Mac, when I say, where is the number in the math of keeping Bridgewater versus bringing in Aaron Rodgers and possibly losing two or three veterans, surrendering three top, you know, number one picks, and maybe a Hamler or a Judy or whatever, whoever they ask for.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because when you say it that way, it's to me, it's like this would have been the year for Rodgers because you would have had Vaughn. You would have had Kareem Jackson.
Right.
You have Justin Simmons in his prime.
Right.
You have Jerry Jeudy.
But
now you
it.
Might not do all that. You might lose Von Miller as a free agent. I hope not. You might lose Kareem Jackson as a free agent. You might lose one of your top receivers. You know, I mean, there's just so many more dynamics that honestly, the best fit was this spring.
By the way, Mike Silver, we made up, by the way. I don't know if you knew that. Me and Mike Silver, we were at odds.
I know that.
We made up.
That's good to hear.
So, Mike Silver on Twitter. You want an interesting read? Go read Mike Silver's account of the divisiveness with Kyle Shanahan and the LaFleurs, who were really close. Matt and Mike. And Mike LaFleur is the offensive coordinator for the Jets, and obviously Robert Saleh was out with the 49ers, so there's a tightness there. But go read Mike Silver's account of where things got with Aaron Rodgers to the Niners. So never mind the Broncos. There was a very good chance and a distinct possibility he was going to end up with the 49ers.
They're never going to trade him to the Niners, though, would they?
Go read it.
Okay.
Go read Silver's account of it. It's a fascinating read right there on Twitter. There's something great about just talking crap about Bill Belichick, especially when it comes from Tom Brady's dad. And Tom Brady's cult leader, Alex Guerrero, is out there ripping the Patriots, too. That's in the water cooler next.
Hey, guys. Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big-time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
We find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and D-Mac.
What would you say you do here?
Thank you, Richie. Tyler's out today, but we got our pedal with Palumbus gear in. It looks great. I'm sporting the biking kit, or at least the jersey part of it. And I think it looks cool. I love it. Can't wait to ride on Saturday with everybody. It's going to be fun. Troy, get you out on a bike.
I'm not a bike guy. Motorcycle, yes. Not a bike
guy. You're not a bike guy. What does that mean, not a bike guy?
I've never really been a bike guy. I'd rather race motorcycles, ride motorcycles, but I just don't ride bikes. I'm not a bike guy.
I get it. It's a form of exercise. You know, it's more than a, you know.
I'm walking our 4-month-old bulldog now at 6:30 in the morning for an hour every day. That's been good. It's been good for he and I. It strains our relationship at times because he's a pup. But it's been, he gets up.
Oh,
I saw
you posted a picture of the sun or something.
That was out walking Bentley.
There you go.
Every day now.
There you go.
Because he sleeps.
I like that. You should post a picture every day. A little little shot of inspiration. A little Mamba mentality.
Exactly.
Little rise and grind.
Sunset hard pants.
I started doing these 5 a.m. workouts just to sort of, a little bit of solidarity with my kid and a little bit of, I talked to the Broncos PR people and they're all like, we all work out at like 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that's been forever.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, how do you do that? So I've been trying to do it a little bit, and that's a different type of person. I go into the gym. There's a spin class at 5 o'clock in the morning. 5 a.m. spin class. I go in there, and there's people there. There's the 4 o'clock people. Who are these people? I mean, I think I'm a nut getting there at 5 a.m. And then there was, two people in the spin class. So there's like 2 people in the spin class, but she's still, let's go! It's like, it's me and Shirley over here. out of the saddle, come on, you can do it. You guys look great. It's just me and Shirley. That's it. I go to her after the class. I go, you ever do just like a spin class with like one person? And she goes, yeah, it's like a personal training session. I'm like, wow. And that'd be too much attention. I don't want that. I like to hide. I like to just be part of the group. There's 2 people there, me and Shirley, Troy. There's like a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure to perform with just 2 people.
You need the no judgment zone.
Exactly. I'm sitting there. Can I do better than Shirley? And am I impressing Jenny? And Jenny's telling me this. She's like, she had a kid like 8 weeks ago. She's like kicking ass. I'm like, you just had a kid 8 weeks ago? Who are these people?
They love exercise. It's who they are. I always, one thing, and I think I heard you talking about this the other day. When you get up to work that early, it makes the day so long because you're done with the workout and you get home and it's like 6:45.
Have you ever heard the Adam Sandler bit on that? Oh my God, it's hysterical.
I would love to hear it because I've done it where I've had to get up for flights, right. Not to work out. But right. Like when the Broncos played the Giants, my son Dagan met me back there after the game. It was a 4:25 Eastern start.
Yeah.
And you do all the TV work. We get back to the hotel, yeah. Do the podcast. Podcast didn't work 3 different times. Finally get it to work. By the time he had produced the podcast and we put it, it was 2:30. I had to get the shuttle to the airport at 3 a.m. for a 5 a.m. flight. And those days just become so long. It's literally like you're walking through slow motion. But
Sanders goes like, oh, you get up, you work out, you eat breakfast, you get the kids. Oh, that's what they do. That's how they get to school. You get to work. It's 10:30. When is this day going to end?
Is it lunch yet? I've been awake for 8 hours. I'm hungry. I'm cold and I'm hungry. Feed me.
Jenny, the spin instructor, she goes to me, well, that's nothing like one person. She goes, sometimes I've had nobody. And I just start the class. I go, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah, because the class goes like in a certain order. So I just start it because if somebody jumps in, it still has to end at the same time. So I got to start it no matter what.
She can't just not start it?
I don't know.
She's paced
they
like
do,
a
car- They do some like zone thing. I don't know. Like it's a it rotates.
Oh, I see.
I don't know. There's like, who knows how it works?
I'm not questioning
Jenny.
You should have found someone on the street that just had a big gulp. And a bag of chips paid him $50 to sit on a bike and just let her yell at him the whole time.
That'd be funny.
The no judgment zone of spin class. Maybe you're right, though. When it's only a couple people, they're looking right at you. Can't hide.
Was so much pressure today. It was too much. I'm like, I gotta do something here today. I gotta be all right. Let's go, Jenny. And she said, great job. And I was like, thank you. I really appreciate it. Tom Brady Sr. All right, let's hear it. This is him. This is Tom Brady Sr., Troy. Talking to Tom Curran, who we know, on the Patriots Talk podcast. I'll get to Guerrero unloading on Belichick, but here's Tom Brady Sr.
As he prepares to come back to New England in a short period of time, what's your feeling?
What's my feeling? My feeling is that Tommy is extraordinarily appreciative of everything that happened during his New England career, and he's more than happy that he's moved on, because it was pretty obvious that the Patriot regime felt that it was time for him to move on. And frankly, it may well have been the perfect for Belichick to move on from him. On the other hand, I think the Tampa Bay Bucs are pretty happy that the decision was made in Foxborough that they didn't want to afford him or didn't want to keep him when his last contract came up.
Do you find a measure of vindication for your kid?
Damn right. Belichick wanted him out the door, and last year he threw 56 touchdowns. I think that's a pretty good year.
Do you think that Tom feels the same way?
Damn right.
Wow. And then Guerrero is like, Bill was, I think his emotions or feelings never evolved with age. Tom got in his 30s and 40s. Bill was trying to treat him like a 20-year-old kid. Players realized Tom was different. He's older. He should be treated differently. All the players, none of them would have cared if he was treated differently. That's true. I think that was such a Bill thing. He never evolved. You can't treat someone who's in his 40s like they're 20. It doesn't work. People could have made different choices. They could have rode out into the sunset together. That could have been a pretty cool story, too. It is preposterous, Troy, that they moved on from Tom Brady. I mean, it is arrogant beyond belief. And you can hear the anger when you talk to dads, when you talk to sports dads, and they're being honest, you know what's really going on.
Yeah, there's definitely some validation and affirmation for Brady to succeed without Belichick. It was fascinating to me, and I don't take the trainer part, I just kind of dismiss. To your point, Tom Brady's dad knows what his son said. He knows what his son was going through. They're still close. Yep. They have a very good relationship. And what I never understood about the way the Patriots allowed this to happen, because they drafted his replacement in Jimmy Garoppolo, whatever that was, 5-6 years ago.
Right.
That was the succession plan. And then Robert Kraft stepped in and basically said, you got to move on from this side. Tommy wants him gone. And they gave him away to the Niners. They didn't even call any other teams. Nobody even knew Jimmy G was available. And they just basically, fine, move him. And Belichick was just like, trade him for anything. I don't care.
Right.
And he was mad about that, clearly. But what I never understood was, if it weren't for Brady's willingness to basically take no money for most of his career as the top player in the league, they don't win those Super Bowls. Why is it wrong to just acknowledge he's different? And there's a point where, and this is one of the reasons I don't like Joe Judge from the outside looking in, because I read a story last year where he said when he was with the Patriots that they could have won with any quarterback, that Tom wasn't special. Are you insane? You're the special teams coach. They could win with any special teams coach. They're not winning in a dynasty with any quarterback. I don't know why it's so hard for them just to embrace. You had the greatest player ever, and you allowed him to walk out the door because of your own hubris. And I think Belichick wanted this. He thought he would win first before Brady would win. And I'm sure they loved that he went to Tampa, a woebegone franchise that had one outlier year with John Gruden coaching Tony Dungy's players. But you know that area of Boston. They were thinking, he goes to Tampa, we're going to win without him, we're so smart, we'll make Cam Newton functional. How'd that work out? And you can hear it in Tom Brady's dad's voice of, how does this taste now? Is this a human aspirin? Can this be more bitter? How does it taste, Patriots? Because my son's going to walk back in there, you won't be able to see him from the blinding ring he's wearing from Tampa Bay, and that's the only one he's wearing. I love it. I love the pettiness of it, because he's the greatest of all time. There's no even argument for it. And you allowed him to walk out the door.
And when he walks back into Foxborough, he is going to get the loudest ovation. He is going to get the tribute from the fans that has never, ever been bestowed on a visiting former player in any sport ever in the history of sport.
I hope you're right. He deserves that. I hope you're right. Because he deserves that. And it doesn't dismiss what Bill Belichick's done as a coach. He will go down as the greatest coach. But I've always had this argument. Is the coach or the system? Look at Bill Belichick's record without Tom Brady. Look at it in Cleveland. Look at it this last year. He better hope Mac Jones is functional, because he could go almost what Mike Shanahan experienced without John Elway.
We had a crazy – we'll get to the Broncos and the Jets coming up with football at four, and we'll go from there. But we had another interesting moment today about redemption and salvation. Hockey plus blood. Details next.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
Tyler off today. Troy Rank is in. We'll get into the more about the Jets. Vic Fangio being a cheapskate. Respect for him given by Robert Saleh. All that fun stuff. That's on the way. Today, the Avalanche opened training camp, and it was fun to watch him. It's a great secret that at Family Sports at Peoria and Arapahoe, a facility I've been at, Troy, my kid started to learn to skate when he was 4 years old. That was 17 years ago. I was so bummed out by his senior year. He had quit hockey, but I loved being a hockey dad. I mean, I loved it. Just loved it, because I didn't play hockey. My dad played hockey at Northeastern, played baseball and hockey at Northeastern back in the day. My uncle played at Cornell. My grandfather started the Hingham Skating Club in Hingham, Massachusetts. And for whatever reason, I played basketball. Greatest athletic mistake of my life. I really wish at 10 my parents would have let me know there's no way I was going to dunk. But I love hockey. But I just don't know that much about it. So as a parent, I would just go, Troy, and, you know, let somebody else do everything. It was the greatest. And they always have restaurants with beer at all the kids' hockey stuff. So, I mean, it was really fantastic. So going there is nostalgic for me just in general, because I love going there. But seeing the Avalanche there is always a thrill, because that's where they do their training camps and practices during the season when they're not skating at Ball Arena. But it was interesting listening to Landeskog and Nathan MacKinnon. True story, Nathan MacKinnon in the first few minutes of training camp caught a puck to the chin and was bleeding, left the ice, got stitched up, and finished the practice. That actually happened. Hockey player tough actually happened with Nathan MacKinnon. Bleeding, stitches, finished practice, no biggie, first day of training camp. But what they were somber about is, how do you get back to a championship moment when it was in your grasp and you could not seize the moment? And you could feel a certain struggle with that, Troy.
Yeah, I mean, one thing we've tried to reconcile with the Avs is how good they can be in the regular season and then it doesn't show up in the playoffs. And is it that argument, D-Mac, of glitz versus grit? And in the playoffs against the tougher, more physical teams, their skating doesn't matter. It doesn't show up in the way it does in the regular season. It's almost like baseball where you have teams that are great regular season teams, but in the playoffs, they don't really have aces, so they don't match up against teams that can roll out, you know, Scherzer and Buehler and these aces. So I wanted to be there today to see, ask Jared Bednar the uncomfortable questions. Are you the guy to lead them to this next step? McKinnon, are you know, what is it about this group that needs to change? Is it toughness? Is it the identity? Is it the physicality? Because that's at the core of this. We know they're great.
Well, McKinnon talked today. He goes, you know, some guys get it in the first couple years, and that's that. And it's just been years for these two, Landeskog and McKinnon. Years and years and years now. And they haven't got it. And I think they thought it was going to happen by now. I really do. I think you start questioning. Now, they're in life relatively young men, of course, but in hockey parlance, they're getting older. It's getting longer in their career, and you can only hope to be healthy enough to have that moment for so long if you're lucky. We'll see.
Well, and last year, D-Mac, felt like the first time, and I hate to use it in sports, but they kind of choked. It felt that way. That was a series that we all expected them to win based on how that night series opened.
Sure. Why wouldn't you?
I mean, they're playing great. And
you don't expect them to get swept at that point.
Right,
it's ridiculous.
They embarrass a backup goalie, but then they win another game, and they might have been outshot. But then from the moment of like the second part of game two on, they were absolutely just had their ears boxed.
And let's dig into the difficulties between what's harder to do, come back in that moment or keep building towards something, which is what the Broncos are doing. We'll get there with Football at Four next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.